Move now from fire to water. People who live and work near the ocean are already taking stock of the rising ocean and trying to make plans for a future when the ocean is higher still. A recent report from the Center for Climate Integrity puts dollar figures on prepping for high water. State by coastal state, there are dollar figures for how much it would cost to construct seawalls to keep the water off the land. California and Oregon together total roughly $30 billion in the report, about three quarters of that, not surprisingly, in California. The report is called High Tide Tax, the price to protect coastal communities from rising seas. Our guest is Sverre Leroy, who's a climate change scientist, lead analyst at Center for Climate Integrity, and a boat captain as well. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
Now, I bring up the boat captain part because this tells me you have intimate knowledge of the ocean, even without the facts and figures. What differences do you see with your own eyes?
So I'm from South Central Alaska, which is not having the same sea level rise issues as your coastline is. We are seeing ocean acidification issues, which the West Coast is very familiar with. I just left the Bay Area, and the San Francisco Embarcadero is being inundated by king tides multiple times a year now. It's pretty amazing to see downtown San Francisco flooded by the ocean.
Indeed. Now, you've got dollar figures and explanations for 22 coastal states and the District of Columbia. This sounds like a lot of data collection had to start this process.
Yeah. The folks who started this process were Climate Central, and they worked with the scientists who developed the sea level rise model that we're using, which is a very sophisticated model. It takes into account all of these little differences. Sea level rise is different up and down the West Coast, from East Coast to West Coast, based on all sorts of different oceanographic effects and geologic effects. So takes into account every single tide gauge and gives us pretty very local sea level rise numbers for our communities, and then we use those to project into the future.
Okay, so it's not just a general, like, this much per, we're average out on every place. You're looking at more local figures on what the rise has been so far.
Yeah, very local.
I don't see Alaska and Hawaii on this, Sverre. Why were they left off?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked. Both of those states are seeing sea level rise. My area of Alaska is not yet, but other parts are. Hawaii is certainly under siege right now, and so are the U.S. territories. They're not included in the study because those coastlines were not part of the NOAA shoreline data set that we use to define the medium resolution data set that shows us all the little inlets and islands, every little bit of shoreline that exists. And those states and territories were not included in the data set.
So that phrase, every little bit of shoreline, is the assumption then that you would construct seawalls to follow every little bit of shoreline there?
So we're only protecting public infrastructure, which is probably not how things are going to play out in the future, right? We're certainly going to want to protect some homes. And there may be certain like natural features that we also try to protect. But in this study, we considered protecting national parks, for example. That would be a policy decision, and we didn't want to make any policy decisions. So this is kind of bare minimum what we need to do to sustain our communities in the next 20 years.
So I believe you said in other places this is not a worst-case scenario you're putting out here, either in dollars or in sea level rise. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So for sea level rise, we're only looking at the next 20 years, and sea level rise does not stop at 20 years. It actually will pick up pace. The rate of sea level rise has been increasing pretty dramatically. First, it was a slow increase from like the late 1800s to the early 1900s, then a bump up in most of the 1900s, and then in the last 25 years, we've seen the rate just really increasing, and we expect that rate to continue to increase into the future. So sea level rise is going to continue after 2040, obviously, and we're also using a moderate estimate of emissions. So we're using these emission scenarios that are used by the IPCC report. They're called RCP scenarios. And they basically, you have the high emission scenario, you have kind of a mid-level emission scenario, and then a very low-level emission scenario. That's like if we really get our act together. So we looked at those bottom two. We looked at the mid-level and then the if we really get our act together. And in fact, the mid-level, which is RCP 4.5, that's, we are currently off that trajectory. We are currently emitting more than that trajectory called for. So we're, if we could hit RCP 4.5, if we could get our emissions down to that level, we'd be doing okay, but we're not there yet. Right now, we're emitting more than that.
All right. So at this point, the trajectory is to end up someplace above RCP 4.5 and therefore with predictably or presumably higher seas than what we're looking for in high tide tags.
That's right. And, you know, another thing in this study, we add a one-year storm surge. That's your average annual storm surge. And again, this is very local. So this is based on your region's NOAA tide gauge. So you could imagine a storm surge in Olympia, Washington is going to be very different than a storm surge in Astoria. So we add this average one-year storm. This is the storm you've been getting for the last 30 years. And this is not what people recommend, right? Scientists are recommending that cities plan for a 100-year storm and sea level rise by the year 2100, which is a much more catastrophic scenario than what we're playing around with in this study.
The study is called High Tide Tax, the Price to Protect Coastal Communities from Rising Seas. It's from the Center for Climate Integrity. Sverre Leroy is climate change scientist and lead analyst on the study. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The total for the entire country, this is 22 states and the District of Columbia, not Alaska, not Hawaii, something like $400 billion. California, about $22 billion of that, Oregon, $7.6 billion, let's say. But again, we're talking just passive things like seawalls, and it sounds like you're saying not protecting all of the coastline.
Yeah, you know, we're using public infrastructure as a proxy for homes, too. There would be some cases, based on how we did this analysis, if there was a home built right on the beach and the road was set, you know, a half mile inland, then we're not going to protect that home. But most homes, if they're built on the beach, the road's right behind them, and that home would get protected. So, but you're right. We're only looking at public infrastructure as defined in, some public database that we used.
So protecting roads and things like that.
Roads, hospitals, schools, mm-hmm. rail, right.
Are you making some assumptions here about communities not being able to afford seawalls? And this is the first time I've seen the term managed retreat. I mean, is this something that people are seriously considering in terms of, like, let's not occupy that land anymore because it will be underwater?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was one thing that really struck me about our results, the number of not even cities, these are census designated places. They're unincorporated population hubs. And, you know, there are so many of them along our coastlines. And the per capita cost, you know, these places have very few people and the per capita costs are just through the roof. We're talking like 10,000 communities that I don't know how they'll afford. I don't know how we'll afford to pay to protect them. So managed retreat is something that is happening globally now. the United States has been a little slow on the uptake, honestly. It's happening in Washington State. There's a village on the outside of the Olympic Peninsula, part of the Quinault Nation, that's currently being moved, I believe, by the Army Corps of Engineers. There's a town in Louisiana that received the first federal grant to move last year. And there are five villages, at least five villages in Alaska, that are in the process of moving. But the funding, finding funding to move these, Alaska, those villages have really been out of luck. They're piecing together grants from nonprofits, a little bit of emergency funding here and there from the state, maybe a little from the federal government, but there hasn't been a program in place to move these communities. Whereas in, you know, you could imagine some, like the Marshall Islands, these South Pacific nations, they have better federal programs to relocate their community members than the United States does. But this is going to become a very big problem for us very fast.
Yeah, manage retreat again. And I'm glad you brought up some other states because it gives me a chance to let people know where things stand. Florida, by the way, is the number one state on this list for expenses of building seawalls to protect public infrastructure. About $76 billion for Florida. Louisiana next on the list at number two, about half that amount. You mentioned Washington, which is actually slightly above California at number seven, about $24 billion. California, again, $22 billion. Oregon down at number 16, about $7.6 billion. We get into county by county to Solano County, you show the most impacted in California, but Humboldt, not surprisingly, with its big king tides. Close behind it, price tag of $2.5 billion. Mendocino County, $2.3 billion. There's a lot of money for a county, I would think. And is anybody talking in terms of spending that kind of money at this point?
No. You know, you have big communities like New York City that are, well, you know, they're doing a number of things. They're actively, you know, they're taking big oil to court to find ways to pay for this. They are actively, since Hurricane Sandy, totally protecting their five counties using these different coastal defense structures. They're ahead of the game. You know, there's other communities that have done their own studies, which are going to be way more detailed than the work that we did. Ours is really broad brush strokes. You know, every community needs to do their own study. And almost certainly the numbers are going to be higher than what we are saying for a few reasons. One, you know, you have to factor in seawalls are not necessarily environmentally friendly. They really can destroy beaches. You know, they everything below a seawall will erode. And so anywhere where there's salmon habitat, there's seawalls are not necessarily the best bet. And so you're often looking at more expensive defensive structures. So seawalls, we use seawalls because it was it's a yardstick that we can use.
Right, but a passive structure, so not a chance to like let the water back into the ocean, that sort of thing.
Right. And with seawalls, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. You got to get some pumps too, because, like you said, they're passive, and so once water breaches them, you have to pump it out. That cost is not included in the study. You know, we're not calculating the cost of moving wastewater treatment plants or sewage. The price, yeah. So I think the estimate that we have provided is about 15-20% of what it will actually cost to protect communities that are facing sea level rise.
Okay, so that much more on top of what you're talking about here. You basically take this figure and multiply it by four, perhaps. And if people are wondering, Lincoln and Clatsop are the most impacted counties in Oregon, $1.7 billion and $1.6 billion, respectively. There's a recommendation in the report for who should pay. Who do you think that should be, Dr. Leroy?
Yeah. So I think oil companies, since 1968 at least, have known that their products cause global warming. So this is, you know, through research conducted in academic institutions and in nonprofits. So we believe, my organization believes that these companies should pay for some amount of the damages. This idea is called climate liability, and it basically reflects the legal principle that climate polluters, like anyone else, should be held responsible for the damages that their products cause. I think big oil should pay for some of this.
All right. It is a big tab, as we've pointed out. The entire total for the entire country, something like $400 billion. And as Severa Leroy just mentioned, that might be actually 15 to 20% of the actual costs if it were done this way. There are certainly some ways to consider other approaches. But the report is called High Tide Tax, the Price to Protect Coastal Communities from Rising Seas. California's price tag pegged to $22 billion. Oregon's at $7.6 billion. Severa Leroy is climate change scientist and lead analyst at the Center for Climate Integrity on this report. Thank you for joining us on The Exchange today.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.